everybody, and welcome to Just Ask. We are here today, so excited to be in Sexual Health Month, September, and three amazing women we have for you today. I'm going to learn all about the great and wonderful things that they're doing out there. We're so excited for today's panel. So for those of you who don't know, Just Ask is a patient advocacy panel we bring in on a monthly basis. A sexual health expert, which in today we have three, so triple the fun, and basically encourage patients to ask their questions that they may have surrounding sexual health, pelvic health, medicine, in a safe space that's non-judgmental, that's for everyone, and the questions can be private to Heather and I, or you can ask them in the chat section, but either way, someone will get back to you, and Just Ask's main initiative is to promote the understanding and advocacy of conversation surrounding women and men's sexual health, wellness, and dysfunctions by utilizing multidisciplinary experts in the field, including medical, pharmacy, pelvic floor, and counseling and educators. So without further ado, I'll give it over to my colleague, Heather Quayle, a women's health nurse practitioner, who will introduce our amazing guest today.
Thank you, my friend. So, of course, this is probably all five of our favorite month of the year because it's September and it's sexual health awareness. These three, I cannot give them any other word except badass, badass women. All three of them are amazing. They are not only my colleagues, but they're my mentors, they're my friends, and I adore them. So this probably is honestly one of my favorite ones we do. So yes, big heart to all of you. Okay, so I am going to start off. We're going to go in alphabetical order. You're going to meet my friend and colleague, Elise Fosnight, my friend and colleague, Jenna. And I always call her Be Rich, and I'm going to let her say her last name because I will totally mess that up. And then my other amazing colleague and friend, Nisha McKenzie. So let's start with Elise. Elise, please, please, welcome, welcome. Tell everybody a little bit about who you are and what awesomeness you've created.
Well, thank you, Heather, and thank you both so much for having me on today. This is so important and so excited to be here for the month of September with Sexual Health Awareness Month. So I am Elise Fosnight. I am a certified physician assistant, and I am in Asheville, North Carolina. I've been a practicing PA for the past 9 years, and in 2014, I completed a postgraduate certificate in sexuality counseling and education from the University of Michigan. I'm also a nationally certified ASECT sexuality counselor and supervisor and educator. I'm a menopause practitioner, just all of those crazy little credentials.
Every letter you can think of after her name, I just call her Elise Fosnight A through Z.
My brother was laughing at me because he said, are you going for like the whole alphabet? What's happening? So maybe someday I'll just claim the whole alphabet after my name. So my story originates probably about 3.5 years ago. Sexual medicine, well, it actually happens way further than then. But sexual medicine has really always been a real important piece to my life. I was always that person in high school that people came for questions about and, you know, their periods or, you know, sex hurting or whatever it was. And so when I was in PA school, all of my friends and colleagues were doing, you know, sports medicine for their master's thesis. And I was, for those out there, that's great, but it's just boring for me. So a Viagra commercial came on the television while I was talking to my mom. And I said, oh my gosh, I have to do this. This, you know, I have to reach female sexual health. If there's a blue pill for men, there's gotta be this pink pill for women. And at that time there was nothing. And I was pissed off. I was like, this is messed up. I don't understand why we have so many options for men. We're learning about erections and premature ejaculation in school, but why are we not learning about the clitoris and female parts and pieces? So that was my mission at that point to do that. And what I found was the majority of the sexual health articles for women were under urology journals. And that's where I kind of fell into the urology realm. I got a job right out of school at a urology practice. He wanted me to focus a lot on female sexual health, female urology. But at that time, his practice was 80% men. And so I came to love my penises and prostates too, and recognize that you know, that was a really important piece to the picture to you. So I got into it, recognized that I needed more, and that's when I went on to the University of Michigan to do some more education and training. And I see cis men, cis women, trans, non-binary patients. I see everybody. And that's what I love about being under in the field of urology is I don't feel limited. I feel like I get to do all of it, which I really love. And so I created a sexual health pelvic rehab program for our office probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And for my prostate cancer patients, for my women that had had radiation done to their pelvises because of uterine cancer, cervical cancer, and recognize that we really need to be doing a much better job at preventing these things from happening. It really, again, pisses me off that we try to prevent breast cancer, colon cancer. We do all these screenings, cardiovascular stuff, but we're not preventing the pelvic health side of it, especially with our pregnancy and postpartum ladies. As I've got three kiddos, I really recognize firsthand that we need to do a much better job. So I developed this program. I had a patient who he had had a radical prostatectomy at age 55 for a pretty invasive prostate cancer, lost all erectile ability, and so came to see me for that. We put him into my pelvic rehab program, so seeing a pelvic floor physical therapist, a series of taking oral medications, penile injections, all of this other stuff, exercises, sexual counseling with his wife, and after a year was able to have spontaneous erections on his own. And I mean, just awesomeness. But he just kind of kept following up with me with his PSAs and things like that. And so we had a conversation about 3.5 years ago, and he said, "Elise, what do you want to do? What's your love? What do you want to do?" And I said, "I would love to have this really amazing sexual health center where we have everybody. You know, we know that sexual health is biopsychosocial. So you need the medical piece, you need the pelvic PTs, you need sex therapy. So all of it. I want all of us under one roof." But I was like, I'm too young. I am still early on in my career." And he said, "No, do it now." And here we are 3.5 years later. I just opened up the Fosnite Center for Sexual Health in June of 2020, and I'm making my dreams come true. So I'm gonna start crying because I can't pinch myself. Like, this is actually happening.
Yeah, so, you're giving me chills because we've watched this and it's amazing.
Yeah, and so just having my doors open, you know, just not even 3 months, and I am just blown away of the support in my community, how many people are reaching out. I have pelvic pain. I have low libido. I have erection problems. I have communication problems with my partner. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And then creating a safe space for patients to come, especially in the LGBTQIA community. I just, and my trans non-binary patients, just validating who they are, helping them to give them choices, and making as big of a difference as I can.
Oh my gosh, so awesome. And I'm also going to tell our viewers too that we are going to take each of these amazing women and probably have them for their own their own platform with us. So you'll get to see more of them. So now I'm going to move on to my other amazing, wonderful colleague, Dr. Jenna. So go ahead and take it from here and please tell us your background and the awesomeness that you created as well.
So I'm Dr. Jenna Ben-Yunis. No one can ever say my last name. So the nurses and techs always call me Dr. Beyonce, which is totally fine. I will absolutely own that. So I'm a women's health nurse practitioner and a certified nurse midwife in the DC area. And I do a million different things because I just have such a passion for not only caring for my patients, but building practices that are sustainable, because I feel like in healthcare, it's just not the way that insurance companies reimburse us and the way that the system is built, it's just not sustainable. So you get these wonderful clinicians that do really good work, and then we're burnt out within 5 or 10 years of getting into practice. And then I'm also really passionate about educating the next generation of clinicians. So I have my own private practice in Alexandria, Virginia, with a colleague of mine and business partner, Claire Rodriguez. That's called Transcend Healthcare. So much like Elise, we do LGBTQ care. We focus a lot on sexual health. We also do fertility. And then I also personally do menopause. Our big thing in starting that practice is, I jokingly say I lost my mind. My business partner says we found our minds after about 10 years practicing in big academic institutions and other private practices. We just thought there's a better way to do this. I don't want 10 minutes with my patients. I don't want my patients waiting an hour for me because I'm I'm not sitting around eating bonbons. I'm like rushing through my day, getting my work done, and then coming home to chart and neglecting my family and my personal life, and then still not giving the care that I want. And just the environment, making sure that it's, like Elise said, a legitimate safe space, not just like, oh, the lights aren't falling through the ceiling, but where I have a team that works with me that understands our mission, that we have the same philosophy of care, that my patients aren't going to be waiting in a paper drape. Like, it seems silly, but my patients come in and they actually get a legitimate plush robe to see me in. I talk to you before you take your clothes off. It's all trauma-informed care and consent-based. So I'm very lucky to do that. I also went back when I had first become a midwife and nurse practitioner, they really train us in school to know your scope, to practice to the fullest extent that you can, but to consult as you need to. And I remember graduating and I started seeing a lot of patients who, kind of like Elise, I'm always asking, like, how's your sexual health? Do you enjoy it? Do you have any pain? What's going on? And so many patients would have concerns of pain, low libido, incontinence, and being the good nurse practitioner I was like, oh, I don't know that much about that. I'll refer them to my physician colleagues who are all wonderful. But then the patients would come back to me and said, hey, listen, I've been seeing you for years. Your physician colleague was nice, but they also had no idea what to do with it. So I thought, there's got to be something else. So I started doing conferences, whether it was ISHWISH, the International Society for Women's Sexual Health, or Study of Women's Sexual Health, and Northern American Menopause Society, and International Society for Vulvovaginal Disease. And I started to get this clinical skill to care for patients that were having we see this all the time, but weird things, pain, low libido, recurrent bacterial vaginosis or yeast infections. And I was treating patients effectively, which was great. And then I still see them 6 months later for their follow-up. And they're like, oh yeah, Dr. B, like, my pain is gone, but I'm divorced, or my partner and I still hate each other, or my pain is gone, but my libido is not. I started to see that there was obviously that biopsychosocial component. So I, again, referred, and I'd send people to couples counselors, and the couples counselors were great, but they wanted to talk about communication, about dishes and logistics and kids, and half of them didn't want to talk about sex. And then I started sending people to sex therapy, and the sex therapists were wonderful around here in DC. We have such a plethora of really good physical therapists and sexual health therapists to send people to. But the sex therapists were on backlog for months. And when people want help and are ready to pull the trigger and do it, they don't want to wait 6 months. They want it now. So the other problem that I also ran into was in seeing people who had a lot of medical nuances to their care. Sometimes the sex therapists were focused so much on the mental health aspect that they didn't always understand the medication piece, or weren't as ready to do kind of a combined approach. So I thought, hell, I'm going to go back to school like Elise did and do my training to learn to do sex counseling. I'm way behind in applying for my certification for it, but I also see patients for counseling. And then I have an online platform that I recently started called drgenevieve.com. which does the online courses for professionals, because I get so many students and peers that reach out saying, hey, how do I get into advanced gynecological or women's healthcare? How do I start doing LGBTQ care? How do I negotiate a contract? How do I do suture labs when I teach my students? So I thought, let me just put this online so that way it's available for people. And then I teach at Georgetown in their midwifery and women's health program. And Georgetown's been so receptive to bring in so much of the sexual health content. So that way students aren't like I was, 11 years ago, just referring out to people who I thought could help and also had really good intention, but just didn't have the knowledge because it's not in medical curriculum.
And that's a whole other soapbox.
Yes, exactly. That's the whole other piece of things to talk about. But that's what I've been up to.
Yes, amazing and awesome. All right. And without further ado, the awesome Nisha McKenzie, I want to hear all about you and how you started your collective. And please take the platform.
I want to kind of bow out and just say, like, what they said. You guys got it. I mean, the philosophies that we have are all so they're the same. You know, we all have realized these injustices in medicine along our journeys, and we realized that there's more we can do, there's better we can do. So I am a certified physician assistant, as is Elise. I started practicing a little while ago. So I started practicing in 2002, so it's been about 18 years. And I started with family medicine, and I loved family medicine. I loved seeing the babies and then their great grandmas, and I just loved the scope of it. I worked with two gentlemen, the patriarchy, who were wonderful, but they didn't want to do any of the women's health. And so I did all the women's health within family medicine. And I just so often would find myself, I'm a little type A, and I'd find myself not having these answers for these women, or in these awkward situations where they would say, like, clean the cobwebs out while you're down there, you know, something, you know, that I think, is that a joke, or is that a cry for help? Or, but if it was a cry for help, I also didn't know what to say. I was like, okay, you know, there aren't any, you're good, you know, I mean, so you just kind of feel these moments where you go, I am doing an injustice here. There's got to be a way I can do better. So like Dr. Jenna and Elise had said previously, we all just started looking, like, where can we learn more information so that we, you know, I like to say so many people are so noble. I just mostly didn't want to look stupid. I was sitting here going, I don't have the answers for you guys. And I don't like that. So, I mean, you can say there's different things in my background, you know, my childhood and how I was raised and different things, but you don't need to be my therapist as far as why I got into these things. So, I mean, I think there are a lot of reasons that we all kind of walk this walk, but my heart really started going out to these women who were telling me, you know, this isn't, you know, I haven't had sex in this long, or it hurts, and it's okay. I already asked my gynecologist and he said it was normal for my age, or he said it was normal because I've had a few kids, or she said it was normal because of this. It's not always the he's. And it's our lack of training. And it's the idea that sexuality is taboo and that we're not supposed to talk about it. And so I started looking into these different organizations. I found ISWISH, I found ASECT, I found NAMS. And then I realized in family practice, I can't do all that. I need to follow all these other hypertension, diabetes guidelines. I don't have time to focus on that. So I found an OBGYN, a private OBGYN in town, who was willing to take me on. And he actually wanted me to come on. He wanted me to start a sexual medicine practice. And so we did that for about 9 years, and then that ended up not working out. And so in October of last year, I was kind of left with, what do I do? I still feel like there's a lot I can do, but I didn't know how to balance, like you've said, like how to balance the life and the children and the family and the kids and the husband and friends. And then what I want to do for patients and what I want to do to fill my soul. And it was only for a really kick-ass team that I have, that we've worked together for a number of years, that came and just picked me up off my duff and said, Nisha, we can start a practice. And I was like, we can? Are you sure?
Yes.
And so they, you know, dusted me off and shooed me out and said, yeah, we can do this. And they were amazing. So they held me up this whole time, and we took what was going to be just a few months, and then COVID. And then, so we started this practice, same time, actually, Lisa and I had the same opening date, after all this time. So we started in late June, and my goal is to really create a place where in gynecology, so I've worked in gynecology for the past 9-10 years. So a place where that in gynecology, I always think you should be able to go to your vagina doctor and ask about your vagina. Like, that just should be legit. You should be able to say, not only I want it to not have cancer, or please fix this infection, right? You should be able to say, how do I make this work for me, for my relationship? Why doesn't it feel like I think it should feel like? You know, how does my clitoris work? Where is my clitoris? Like, you should be able to ask those questions without feeling a fear of judgment. It wasn't long ago, it was a number of years, maybe 5 years ago, as a healthcare provider, I realized I hadn't had an HIV test in 10 years, like since my youngest was born. And so I went and asked a primary care provider here in town. I said, you know, I was doing my physical. I said, can I have an HIV test? And she knew I was married from my history. And she kind of side-eyed me and she went, is there a reason you need one of those? And I was
I damn well want one.
Yeah, I'm in healthcare. I'm supposed to have one every year. But even if there was a reason, I mean, even if there had been a different reason, I now feel so much shame that I'm not going to ask another question, right? And I just thought, this is just really, this is unfortunate, because this is what people are experiencing on a regular basis. They're experiencing shame for the natural, normal questions that they're asking. I mean, if someone goes in and just says, should I have one? They shouldn't feel shame either. And so, like the other two have said, you know, this affirming, affirmative care, non-judgmental spaces, these are what we need to, this is how we need to practice. Medicine and compassion do not have to be mutually exclusive. And we've been taught that for so long, that it's medicine and this is the way it goes, because we know textbooks, we know medical journals, we know data. And while that's true, the human body is so complex and so beautiful and so different for every person, identical twin sisters, right, could be completely different, that we have to learn that we can respect the fact that our patients know their bodies. And if we can learn to be in a team with them, we can actually help them achieve optimal health in a way that we can't if we just dictate to them what they should be doing and don't listen to what their roadblocks are. And you know, there's so many places that'll discharge clients for being patients for being non-compliant. But if we actually look at that resistance and figure out what's that from, you know, why are they, is it because they don't have a ride here, because they don't have a car, because they don't have a babysitter, because their spouses, not understanding that they need to have these appointments, you know, something like that. If we can help look at that for people, we might be able to help them achieve optimal health. So the collective was born because I think that none of us should have to practice on an island. So as a specialist in gynecology, and now I have, similar to Elise, as far as our ASEC certification as a sexuality counselor, I went through the University of Michigan as a sex educator and a sex counselor, nationally certified through NAMS as a menopause practitioner. You know, I can have a lot of those different certifications, but there's still a lot I don't know that encompasses an entire human. And I need some of my colleagues who are practicing at the top of their licenses to help me with that. So in the collective, I knew at a bare minimum I wanted sex therapists, ASEC certified sex therapists. I wanted a pelvic floor PT, and then I also have a psychiatric PA who helps me a lot with the psych med induced sexual dysfunction. She's also got certifications in peripartum depression and mood disorders and postpartum depression, and she's wonderful. She's a godsend. So I think if we all can kind of practice together and realize that this is not about our pride or what we don't know, we can be really, really, really proud of what we know and also understand there's a lot that we don't. Yeah. If we can do that, I think we do our patients a better service. And so I also think that there's a little bit of contention between Eastern medicine and Western medicine, between, Eastern medicine, there's a lot of finger pointing and saying, okay, those guys are quacks and those guys are poisoning everybody, right? Mm-hmm. But maybe there's a happy medium there. Maybe there's some method of health that can meet in the middle, that can actually work for people, because I've seen so many people get better from whatever they're working with acupuncture or Reiki or something like that. And I go, I don't understand that. And so then when I said I wanted to bring that into my collective, people are like, oh, are you going to learn acupuncture? I go, no, I'm not good at that. I don't know how to do that.
I know someone who can.
But I know someone who can. And then we can work together and help understand, how do you do that? What improvements are you seeing? What roadblocks are you seeing? Here's where I can fill in those gaps. And so we can have kind of board or team meetings. So we'll do that about every 2 weeks, that we meet as a team of different providers and kind of talk about some of the cases and figure out how can we improve their healthcare and what other things can we do. And so we just try to offer all of that under one roof, with yoga therapy for people who have suffered with abuse, with Reiki therapy, a registered dietitian, pelvic floor PT, sex therapy, sex counseling, sex education, a psych PA, a gynecologist for surgical needs, all of that kind of stuff. That's what we've got here in a nutshell.
So amazing. I mean, and it really seems, and I kind of want to discuss this a little bit, like, you all went into it for very, very similar reasons, but you all kind of have different tracks. Like, Elise will see maybe more men than some of you or things in that nature, and Nisha's more on like all women, whether you were born female at birth or not, and Jenna may take more of a pregnancy approach to things. So I love that. But I think the underlying thing is kind of like this whole trajectory and what do we look like as healthcare? Like we've done a really, really garbage job of caring for all women. And it sounds like that's kind of where you guys fill that void. So I kind of just want to talk a little bit about that. Like how are these practices, especially in the world of having three amazing APPs do this and not your typical doctor, how is it different? And how are you, how are you all changing this trajectory? So kind of, Elise, if you want to start, then Jenna, we can just kind of go, or I kind of want to make this more conversational without, yeah.
Yeah, I think just carving this path, like just doing it and recognize. So I am always the one and have always been the one. Ask my mama from the time I was really little that it didn't matter if somebody did it before me. If I wanted to do it, I was going to do it and nobody was going to stop me. And if there was a roadblock, either I learned how to climb over it or I went around it. Like, you know, whenever I had goals, nothing was going to stop me. And so, you know, those were the types of things is just because someone hasn't done it before doesn't mean we can't do it. And I, you know, I bring that principle into how I treat my patients also. There's so many things, especially in sexual medicine, that aren't FDA approved, but yet we know that they work and you have those same muscles in your pelvis. So why, if you're doing trigger points, you know, someplace else and it's working, well, why can't we do trigger points in your pelvis? Like it's, you know, so again, really not pigeonholing myself into thinking that it's just this, I can only go down this one path or I can only do it this way. If it's not working that way, or I see it differently, you know, that's where we're going to do it. And that's, you know, I feel the same way that Nisha does, that it takes a team and your patient is the center of that team. I learn more from my patients sometimes than I did when I went to a conference. Yes, you know, yes. So I see a lot of trans and it's changing constantly. And I don't feel like I keep up with everything that's going on. And so one of my patients said, you know, that their hormone levels and we're trying to, you know, figure out different things. And we decided to go a different route with what they brought to me of doing sub-Q injections instead of IM injections. You know, it leveled things out. And now I actually got to take that to a couple of my other patients that I wouldn't have even thought about. And so, and I share that with that original patient and said, you know, you made a difference in other people's lives by just being honest with me and understanding that you can have those conversations. So, I mean, it's just understanding that just because it's never been done does not mean that you can't do it. And that you have to surround yourself with people that will support you and back you up. There were days that Nisha and I probably talked or text 100 times because we knew we were going through it at the same time. We are thousands of miles away. We knew we needed each other to support each other, you know, for that, you know, and helping to, when somebody, you know, I got the, well, you're just a PA. What do you mean you can open up your own practice? You can do this. And I said, well, you know, state laws and just educating and knowing what, you know, how to go about doing it. Not that we're doing it, you know, sly, but it's, you know, the fact that we need this. We need these resources. Nobody else is doing this out there. And so, you know, taking that risk and stepping up. I think funding for getting money to start something, a business by itself is just crazy. And then you want to, you have to like validate. I've never written a business plan either. Like that's not something I was taught in PA school. So, you know, recognizing where can I go to get that? And so we have a business school just, you know, down the street. So I took a business class. You know, those same principles of running a business translate right over to a medical practice. But it's, you know, just justifying and people want to see the numbers. You know, I decided to not go private investor route. They wanted their sticky hands too much in it and calling the shots and they weren't patient focused. They were money focused.
Yep.
And so, you know, my husband and I, you know, trying to figure out our finances and, you know, going a different way. And, you know, I'm a startup. Nobody wants to lend to startups too. So, you know, reaching out to people and sending in, I had 11 letters of support within 24 hours that I sent over to my lending company and said, this is why I'm doing this. This is why I need the funding to do this. And I was their first medical business that they had ever lended to. And they've learned from that. And now, I mean, I've done, we worked on that for over a year. but now they're lending to other medical practices. So people are seeing this and recognizing that you are an example. I laugh, you know, our sitter decided to leave in August because she wants to pursue her own profession. She said, I saw what you did. You're rocking it out. You're, you know, leaving nobody behind and you're just trudging forward. And she said, if you can do it, I can do it. So, I mean, that's why we're doing this too, is to really empower others to say, you got this and you can do it. You know, but it's just, sometimes you got to send 8 million emails and make 8 million different phone calls for one person.
So Jenna, talk to me a little bit about, like, you're a little bit different than them. So I know that you kind of work in a cash-based mode versus an insurance. And for people that are out there that are patients and even providers that listen to this, how does that look different? And I also kind of want you to talk a little bit about kind of caveating what Elise said, that you don't necessarily, there's enough patients to go around. Like, and I hear it a lot because DC is a plethora of sex med providers, and kind of how do you stand out and how do patients find you and what are you trying to do in your trajectory?
That's such a good question because I think it's one that I struggle with the most. Like I said, I just needed a different model of healthcare and working in institutions that took insurance, right? And I could get on my feminist soapbox about this, but, you know, I think it's BS that an insurance company should dictate how I take care of you. An insurance company should not dictate that this problem that you have only deserves 10 minutes of your time. So what was happening for my patients when I was taking insurance in larger institutions that I was working for, their insurance claim would be denied because their insurance company wouldn't pay for a sexual health ICD-10 code. So then we were trying to find other codes that were legitimate enough to bill. And then the other problem too was you only have a 10-minute appointment with me, or maybe even on a good day, if you were a new patient, 30 minutes. So now if I give you the hour that you deserve and that you need, probably an hour and a half, honestly, now all of my other patients are waiting, which means that you're probably going to wait when you come to see me, but, or you could have multiple visits, but now you're paying your $50 copay to see me for a special visit three times, which is $150. And then you're already pissed because the front desk is slow. You're waiting forever. So I was like, forget it. I can't take insurance. And when I started to put together my business plan, I decided to self-fund my business. So I literally took cash out of my bank account and threw it into my business. And I worked other jobs like teaching and working as a hospitalist to self-fund my business. So every patient that I first started seeing, I literally was almost like paying to see them. But I think what most of my patients have found in talking to them, they were like, you know what, I would rather pay you out of pocket and submit on the back end and hope that I get reimbursement. And even if I don't, it's an investment. It's an investment in my care. I pay to get my hair done. I pay for my lawyer. I pay to get my nails done. I can budget for this and I'm not going to be hit with some crazy fee later, or I'm not going to be hit because now my academic institution is charging $700 to the insurance company that's actually reimbursing the practice $100, or, and then you having to foot the rest of the $600 bill, you can just pay me my fee, which ends up being cheaper, if not the same anyway. And you get a 1.5 hour appointment with me. I struggled with that a lot as a provider because I'm really big into access to care and I didn't want to just take care of rich, wealthy white women who could afford my services. So I did a lot of work in terms of sliding scale and pro bono care and really working with patients and saying like, okay, let's come up with a payment plan. And like I said, when I started looking at numbers and calling insurance companies with friends, it actually ended up being almost the same that most patients were paying out of pocket, but getting much better care. In terms of there being patients, there's, right, like we all know the statistics. It's something like 80% of women at some point in their life will experience pain. Maybe it's transient and it comes and goes, but there's so many women, right? Like 50% of the country, at least for me, because I primarily take care of, you know, women and trans patients, like there's so many patients to go around. And for me, it's not competition. Like I always forget the quote and I should remember it for moments like this, but if we all have candles and I go and blow out your candles and mine shining, the room is still darker. Like it's so much better for everybody to hold their own candle and for me to go around and light more people's candles, because what I'm good at isn't what, you know, some of the other physicians and nurse practitioners in the area are good at, and vice versa. I have a very strong personality, as do they. So location wise, like, I just have not had any issues. Like, I think we've all been so supportive, because at the end of the day, like Nisha was saying, we're all here for the patient, and that's our biggest, biggest focus. And we are able to cross refer to each other, right? Like, if I have someone who needs surgery, I send them to my physician colleagues in DC. If they have someone who needs more counseling, or someone who has 2 hours to sit with somebody and debrief it, they send them my way. Or if it's a weird complex case, I have the time to sit and listen. So, yeah, I feel like if you support people, it comes back to you, rather than trying to squash other people. It just doesn't help. So
I think one of the best takeaways that we're getting today from this, and I love the dynamic of the panel, is that those who are listening, patients, providers, whoever it may be, they're hearing that there is options for them. So there are providers out there who are paving the way in terms of sexual health. There are people who are opening practices, opening businesses, opening multidisciplinary facilities that patients can walk into and say, I need help. They're not pigeonholed or stuck in going to see a provider who's not helping them. I know as a pharmacist, we really believe fully in multidisciplinary teams. I talk to people in so many different disciplines of medicine daily, and it's very important that the patients know, or whoever's watching this, that there are people out there who are all working together in concert to help your condition. And there might not be one person who can help you. You might need two or three people doing different things. So I know, Nisha, you have a lot of that under the same roof. You mentioned yoga, and you mentioned your acupuncturist. So tell us how, in your practice, your patients, if somebody walked in off the street and said, I have an issue, how do you take them in? Do you assess them? Do you say, do they pay all these different fees? Or is it like, we're going to take care of you through a series of visits? Or how does that work? I'm really interested to hear about the multidisciplinary
approach. Make us through a patient. Make us a patient, what it looks like. Because it's
so
just
it's different. Yeah, it's different for everybody. But essentially, we do participate with insurance. My situation was different. Is when we started this program, I had a whole team already. And so I had people who were willing to advocate for patients and for billers and coders and all of this stuff. And so, and I also had a clientele. I had a basis of patients who were waiting for me to open that already had insurance. And I thought, you know, and I had this amount of time off, and I thought, during this time off, this is my time that I'm supposed to go and learn how these insurance companies work and why they work that way, so I can continue to advocate for people in that way. Because it, you know, Dr. Jenna's right. It's, we can practice better medicine if we don't have to use insurance. And that's the sad state it is. Mm-hmm. However, if we can fight hard enough, and the hard part is there's all the financial things to fight against, right? So I have to have extra staff to fight these fights for people, and I have to take extra time, and then we have to go back and fight again, because they can pay you whatever they want to pay you, just based on the day. They don't have to prove that that's what they're supposed to be paying you. They just go, you know, I'm going to pay you this much this time, and you're like, well, that's kind of bull, because you're still charging that patient their full premium. So it's awful. But it is still the world we live in. And in my area, it just seemed like it just made more sense for me to go ahead and participate with insurance and try to help in that way. So when they walk through the door, they almost always see me first. And I always say, I'm just the bossy person in the corner. It's like, you do that work, you do that work, you do that work. I'll just be over here. all the rest of the staff, they do the lion's share of the work. When they see me, I figure out what part of the team and what their whole process will look like. Most things are covered by insurance. And we learn how to do the creative insurance dance, right? We learn how these insurances don't like to pay for things when it says vagina in it. So if I say their vagina hurts, and can I say that? We can say that, right? We can't say that. I might have to hang up right now.
Or their vulva hurts.
Right. Like, or the vestibule or something like that. If I can't bill for that, I can bill for a muscle pain. And then we just, you know, it is a muscle. Like my daughter, when she was, I think she was 7 or 8, she's like, Mom, why can't I say the word vagina at school if I can say the word elbow? I was like, fair. That's a really good question, because like, you should be able to see, say all of those things, because it's just a body part, right? So anyways, I think that if we can roll it back and just understand that people just need this help. I just take them all. I figure out where they need to see. I'm kind of the home base. They come back, I'll do sexuality counseling with people, I'll do couples counseling with people, but they almost always see a number of the team, not just myself. Some of the things aren't covered by insurance. So Reiki therapy is not covered by insurance, and I don't think that's going to change anytime soon. Yoga therapy is not covered by insurance. So we make these things available to people. We have cash pay prices. We have some sliding scale things. But there are some things, even the dietitian, it's a registered dietitian. I mean, you almost got to be, you have to be either on end stage renal failure or have gestational diabetes or something. You have to kind of be close to the end to have dietetics covered.
Sad.
We are getting better with covering some preventative medicine, but not all preventative medicine is being covered. There are some things that people cash pay or they use their HSA to pay, and we work with them. And we just try to understand, you know, what is each patient's specific situation and how can we work within that for them and what kind of payment plans. Like, they don't pay us interest. If we can work out a payment plan, we do that. It gets sticky. It really does. But I figure this was what took my time off, my sabbatical that I was working, 100 hours a week during. This is what I did. I actually went in and met with the CEOs of some of our local insurance companies and just asked them. You know, there's one in particular in town that has a sexual health rider. So there's nothing covered for sexual health with this particular insurance unless their employer has purchased the rider. And a lot of insurance companies have riders, right? Like a weight loss rider, like no weight loss medications might be covered unless they have a weight loss rider. There's a transgender health rider now. But the sexual health rider, I have an issue with first because none of the human resources people even know it's an option. So it's not being offered as an option to these companies when they purchase their plans.
This is fascinating. Like, this is so important for patients to hear this, to advocate for themselves.
And so that's the thing, is if we can encourage patients to advocate, just keep asking. You shouldn't have to, right? We should be able to do this for you, but we don't know these things. And we're stuck in this whole clockwork of, you know, treat them and street them, get them, you know, in and out the door, and you got to meet these quotas. And so anyways, I met with the CEO of this particular company that has this rider to ask her about it. And she didn't even know about it, which I know she's got, you know, bigger things to deal with. And so she put me in touch with the person who does all the riders. He didn't know about it. And so he put me in touch with their medical director. He didn't know about it. And none of them, they're all sitting there going, what is the sexual health rider? We don't know what it is. And the point is, so people who have vaginal dryness due to menopause, they need certain types of medications, sometimes estrogen, sometimes testosterone, sometimes DHEA, because it's dry, it's painful. But the other things that happen is it's not just associated with sex, right? So these people aren't always putting something in their vagina to notice that it's painful. Their bladder may be starting to prolapse or fall, or you know, gravity, the tissue that holds it up gets thinner with menopause, so it doesn't hold it as well. So things start to happen. They start to leak, urinary leaking, bladder leaking, tears. Some of my patients are bike riders. They can't ride bikes. I have patients who are nuns who can't sit because they're in so much pain. They're not having any penetrative sex. This is not a sexual disorder, but because it has something to do with the vagina, these insurance companies aren't covering the treatment for it. And that's maddening. And so I'm still trying to fight this fight and say, you got to get rid of the sexual health rider, or you have to change it so that these people can get the treatment they need without me having to prove that they're not having sex.
So that's our soapbox and that's our platform when you come back on and talk about it. And just, you have just made patients that watch this even more aware. You've made me more aware just knowing that this writer exists and it's awful and
horrible. Yeah,
but
it's pretty awful.
I think you've let other providers know that. I mean, I'll be honest, I didn't know that writer even existed.
So if you remember the old estrogen, the vaginal estrogen, estrace, premarin creams, there's a lot of different vaginal estrogen creams. Before the FDA changed the requirement, I think it was in 2003, for the approval process, it used to be approved for something called vulvovaginal atrophy. Mm-hmm. now these medications based on the FDA have to be approved for something called dyspareunia due to menopause. Dyspareunia means pain with sex. So since that's in the title, anything since 2003 is not covered by this particular insurance because they don't have the rider. It's the same thing. It's the same thing it was before 2003.
So your partner can come home with a, you know, big, strong erection, but if you kind of...
Probably get a penis pump covered even, for God's sake.
Oh, there's a lot of male things that are covered, like Elise was saying earlier, that, you know, so many options and they're covered. We have two options now for low libido and a few options for, you know, atrophy, which, like Nisha was saying, impacts the bladder and urinary tract infections and kidney. And what happens to older women? You get a kidney infection and you end up in the hospital. Now you get COVID in the hospital, right? So like America does not like women.
They don't like vaginas.
They don't like women.
So let's just call it a vulva and get rid of the word vagina. I mean, like, maybe then get better treatment. Frustrating.
Well, and that's a lot of what I, you know, talk to my male patients about. Like I said, I love my penises and prostates and you know, that sort of thing. But at the same time, it's amazing how much they come in and they're asking for these medications. And I ask, well, you know, what are you planning to use it for? Is this self-stimulation? Do you have a partner at home? Well, you know, I have a partner and I'm going to have sex. And I say, well, and it typically is a female partner. I'm like, well, how is she functioning? I don't know. Well, you ain't getting this Viagra prescription out. You know, like it's just not happening. Not that I'm like over here dangling it in front of them, but it's, you know, they just don't think it. It's just so easy. We're so phallic focused, you know, but that's not all that it is. And so that's one of the things, you know, we're talking about women here. And here I am seeing a whole bunch of men, but that's my hope too, is just bringing more awareness to the male population. So, you know, and that it, you know, it really isn't all about your penis. I hate to disappoint you, but that's what it is.
And I love what you do, Elise, because there's so much, I mean, the taboo aspect of sexuality is not just for vagina carriers. It's also for penis carriers, right? It's just a little different. And if penis carriers can get over the, the social hump of asking for help, there is help. That's the difference, right? There's better help. There's more well-known help for penis sexual health than there is for vagina sexual health.
Yes.
Yeah.
So even if the women or the vagina carrying people get over the hump and ask for the help, it's not readily available, or it wasn't readily available. It's becoming more readily available. It's just a matter of knowing where to look and then continuing to push for yourself and advocate. And if there's one thing I've learned, I always say in this whole process, and I had one cousin who told me this when I was trying to figure out what the heck to do with my life, is she said, Nisha, the answer to every unasked question is no. And that has guided me through so much through this. Because you know what? I think it really does. I used to be so scared to ask people questions because what if they don't want to do it? What if it's not comfortable for them? What if I put them in an awkward space? But I think it's actually very disempowering to not give people the option to be a grown-ass person. If you can give them the option, they have the ability to say no, right? Yeah. But I think to take away that is really actually not as noble as I used to think it was.
Well, and I agree, Nisha, because then what happens is when I'm sure this happens to you too, and you too, Dr. Jenna, is when you ask that question, you're going, that patient's like, no one's ever asked me that before.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, I don't know. I don't, I, to be honest, I don't know if I have vaginal dryness, or I don't know if I've ever had an orgasm. Like the, you know, so it really, I think then helps them and, you know, opens up a whole nother, you know, box to say, okay, we have, this is another path for us to explore and to help you with, you know, your understanding your body and pleasure and acceptance, and advocating for yourself, especially in your relationship.
Absolutely. Especially too with like vulvodynia patients, that diagnosis, I understand why it's there, but it makes me nuts because it literally just means pain of your vulva. And I tell my students and patients all the time, if you walked into an ER and said, my chest hurts, and they said, oh, you've got chestodynia, duh, you'd be like, this is insane. Like, am I having a heart attack? Is it acid reflux? Did I pull a muscle? But again, in healthcare, we give people vulvodynia and just say, like, drink some wine and use some lube. So I completely agree with Alicia, or Alicia, I just mixed her names. Alicia, Tanisha. Yes!
That's what my kids say. We're shipped.
That's your Angelina name. So Elise and Nisha, like, if you are not getting the answers that you want, keep fighting, whether you're a patient or a provider. Just keep asking. Find people who will listen. Go online. Like, there's people out there to help figure all of these pieces out and to keep advocating for what we know that we need.
I love it. Deserves. Love it. Well, I know that I would keep you on for another hour, but I'm going to leave each of you with where I'm going to ask you. It's September. It is our favorite month. It's Sexual Health Awareness Month. What do you want to leave as a parting word? I'm going to ask each of you with each provider. And as you wrap up, please tell us where our patients and providers can find you to reach out. So take it from here, Elise.
Yeah. So I am a big advocate just for you as a patient. So know that you are worth it. You are worth the time and you are worth asking those questions. And you can find me at the Foss Knight Center. Excuse me, I don't even know where you find me.
Where am I?
You can find me. It's www.fossknightcenter.com. You're more than welcome to email me, Elise, and that's A-L-E-E-C-E @fossknightcenter.com.
F-O-S-N-I-G-H-T. In case. What about you, Jenna? What do you want to leave as your parting sexual September month, and how do we find you?
I mean, I echo Elise and what I said before. You deserve, women, men, everybody, like, you deserve so much better care than what you are getting. So whatever capacity that needs to work for you to get it, get it. Like, you have one body, you have one life. You should be healthy, you should be happy, and health looks different for everybody. So find a provider who's willing to partner with you and listen. And like Nisha mentioned, not just be like, oh, you're non-compliant, but really listen to what you want and what's realistic for your life and what's going to feel good for you. So keep advocating for yourself, keep advocating for better care, and know that you really deserve it and you're worth it. You can find me a few different places. I'm at www.transcendhealthcaredmv for DC, Maryland, Virginia, not Department of Motor Vehicles, .com. I also, my personal site is Dr. Jenna B, Dr. Jenna B for boy, or Ben Eunice, or Beyonce, .com. Yes, and then also Dr. Jenna B on Instagram as well.
Awesome. And Miss Amazing Nisha, how do we find you, and what words of advice do you want to impart on our platform?
I would say that just remember that you are the captain of your own body and your own health. And we are just ancillary figures out here with a little bit of textbook knowledge to try to help gear you in the direction that you want to go. It's your direction, it's not ours. And you get to choose. And if you're not getting the answers that you feel like ring true for you or resonate for you, then ask again and ask again and ask somewhere else. But you have the right to be able to find who you are authentically in regards to your health, which does include your sexual health, because every human being is a sexual being. You just have, you get to choose how you want to use it and if you want to use it. And it's not up to us to tell you. So I would just love to encourage people, like the others two said, is just advocate for yourself and keep looking and keep trusting yourself, because I think we learn to distrust ourselves because other people don't trust us. And by other people, I mean, you know, the people in our seats. So trust yourself and advocate for yourself. And I can be found at WH Collective for womenshealthcollective.com. And then, I don't know, I think I've got some social media stuff out there under my name. I noticed our names are all up. I'm like the artist formerly known as here. I just have my first name up. I don't actually think I'm that cool. But
I have to have someone even show me how to do it. So,
so well, yeah, WH Collective.
So heart, I love you all so much.
Thank you so much.
You guys are amazing. You inspire me. Like, I get teary-eyed about it daily. And yeah, thank you for all the amazing work y'all do. I'm gonna let Tara carry us out.
I couldn't have asked for a better September. I mean, oh my gosh, you guys are absolutely amazing. And I know every person watching this is like glued to the screen. I mean, I was laughing, like, just bringing it 100%, bring each one of you guys back for your own show. Cause I feel like we only scratched the surface of what so much more information that you guys have up in your brains that we need to tap into, and just the work that you do. We are honored to have you here. We are so proud that there are people like you out there helping patients, treating, and being advocates that you are. So thank you guys so much for being here today. I know we took up your time. You probably have patients in your waiting room, like ready to finish their Friday. And I know y'all are too. So we love you guys and we thank y'all so much. Y'all have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day. And we'll talk soon.
One more thing. In October, we are featuring Dr. Becky Lynn to talk about sexuality and breast cancer. So look for our...
She's amazing.
Yeah. I know. Oh, I can't wait for that.
Yeah. So we're excited for her. And again, we love you all. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the work you're doing.
Thanks.